Hello, you're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but Marcus learning Japanese most certainly isn't. This is episode 111, and we're back, baby. I'm Anne, one of your hosts, and with me, as always, of course, is my co-host, Marcus. Hi.
Hi.
We're coming at you hot from the same room in Casa Pixel Pixel.
Yeah.
It feels weird to be recording again after over a year. We just looked at it. It was last July, right, that we published the last episode. It's a little over a year. We're now wedded. I don't think we should. Last time, I think we shared that we were engaged.
Yeah.
And now we are wed. Betrothed, as they say.
Is that the word for married?
Isn't that what betrothed?
I always thought that was... No, you're probably right. I think you're right, but I always thought that was another word for engaged, but I think you're right.
I think betrothed is marriage.
Okay.
Marriage. I hope so, or someone can correct us. One of our two listeners can send us a message. Yeah. Let us know that we're dumb. But yes, we're back. You know, we talk a lot together, and then sometimes we rant, and we think, oh, people might want to hear this, right? Even though we actually don't have any rants for today, I think. We're going to keep it chill, right?
Maybe.
Oh, maybe. We'll see. There could be a rant in you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. just some quick housekeeping since we're back on air and it's been a while and we're thinking about, you know, how we want to do the podcast to keep it going and that we don't pop in every year and say, hi, we have an update and peace out for another year. I think we both agree. I don't want to speak for both of us, but I believe we're feeling not so much news. News, maybe one or two news. Every once in a while when we have something really hot that we want to talk about, you know, a big game announcement, the next Monster Hunter I have to talk about, or I don't know, when you
Silent
have
Hill.
Silent Hill. We got, oh yeah, the new Silent Hill game's coming out. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that. Yeah, you know, the new Silent Hill movie something. Or anyway, Steam stuff, so you can get steamed about it again. Mm-hmm. but for the most part, I think we're not going to have the old segments we used to have. Maybe we'll find a way to break up the episode so it's not just a dump of us chatting for an hour. You know, we don't want to be one of those podcast bro type scenarios.
So why? They're so successful.
Yeah. Yeah. But there'll be a lot of us talking about what we've been doing, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, what we've been enjoying, maybe less enjoying, too. Just mentioning things we've been consuming. So I think fundamentally it'll be a lot of Media Minutes, which was the old segment where we talked about what we've been reading, watching, playing, etc., enjoying. But we've also got other stuff to chat about. So I hope you enjoy. It's nice to be back. And, yeah, first up, as I alluded to in our intro, Marcus, you're learning Japanese now.
Yep, I am. I'm not sure what spurred it.
You're not?
No.
Yeah, because you've been talking about it for a while,
yeah.
I feel.
I don't know. I've always wanted to learn Japanese.
You told me. Since high school, would you say?
Oh, maybe even earlier, but
the classic weeb.
Yeah, but
desire.
I never did anything about it.
Uh-huh.
So I never got anywhere with it.
Yeah, and now you have a tutor, a live-in tutor with you.
Yep.
Who can quiz you at any moment of the day, right? Mm-hmm. I would say you probably started early August is when we started going through hiragana, and you finally finished hiragana, so you can read things.
Yes. Baby things.
Baby things. And then we'll move on to katakana. For those who are listening that don't know, there are three written forms in Japanese. So you've got hiragana and katakana, which represent sounds, and then kanji, which represent the concepts more. So like a character can have different readings in kanji, and that's a whole other kettle of fish. But once you've got hiragana and katakana down, you can kind of read a lot of things, and then a lot of kanji will have the readings written over them, especially as we're going to talk about in when we go over what games we've been playing, and games aimed at children, they'll often have the furigana or the hiragana readings for the kanji. So you can kind of start immersing yourself in more things after you've got at least those two, hiragana and katakana, down. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm having fun. I like learning things, so I think you know, it's not like a chore to come home and do it. Mm-hmm. I do it at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little practice.
Mm-hmm.
And come home and I do more practice.
Mm-hmm.
Read through a little bit of the Genki book.
That's right. Yeah, we should mention you're using Genki, which I used some of it in college. I think it's pretty standard Genki Integrated Guide to Japanese, I believe is full title. And there are two volumes. You're on volume one. That's like, you know, one of the big ones. No Duolingo in this house. We do not like that green bird. So I would not recommend using Duolingo to learn Japanese, honestly. But we did try some apps. You went mm-hmm. through, there were a handful of apps that
yeah, and a lot of them were bad.
Yeah. Like, really weird, like, I don't know, AI or just computer pronunciation of words that didn't even sound right. Like, they would do the sample word, and it was like, this doesn't sound really like how it should be pronounced. I don't really remember the other problems, but there was a lot of weirdness, I feel, mm-hmm. in some of those apps. Like, highly recommended apps that you would go on Reddit yeah. and people would recommend.
I think another problem was just that if you're a true beginner like me, they were too quick or too fast into what they jumped you into.
Right, so they assume you know something or yes. some understanding of something. But the one that you like, that you've been using is called Renshu, right?
Yeah, Renshu.
And that has a free option as well as a paid option, and you're using it for free at the moment. And that one seems pretty good from what I've seen you play. Like, it's been teaching you the hiragana. It gives you practice. Like, you can write it in the app, right? And then mm-hmm. it quizzes you on it. And I'm actually not sure, aside from that, if it has, like, does it do vocab quizzes or grammar or anything? Or you haven't
there
gotten
are
there?
Quizzes. I think there's some sort of quiz that's paywalled.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it's free. And then it does, like, tailored study towards, you know, what is it? What is the quiz? JLPT,
yeah.
They have, if you want to focus on that, which a lot of people do, I think they have special study things for that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, also, even though it can be paid, you can subscribe or pay a one-time fee to unlock it forever. I always like when they have that option.
Yeah, I feel like apps don't have that option enough. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you could just pay a one-time fee to say Duolingo.
No.
Yeah, so that's good. Maybe you'll pay them for their efforts sometime.
Yeah, if I just keep using it, I don't even necessarily care. I just like to say thanks to the developer.
Yeah.
Because it's like one developer.
Yeah, that's crazy. And they like do all the art and the coding, right?
I think they do all the coding and the UI. I think they hired an artist for it.
Oh, okay. Well, the art's very cute, though. Yes, it and it has like a gachapon element, which I don't know why it has it, but after you do a few things, it'll give you a little gacha spin and give you a random thing, but it's also a vocab word. So it's like, mm-hmm. here's a plate of gyoza.
Yeah.
And it has a cute little image. It's cute.
Yeah. It also has a pretty decent sized community on Discord, which you obviously don't have to participate in, but if you want to, you can. And I see that they do like maybe every week things on the Discord voice.
Weren't you saying they have, like, there's, like, a book club?
Yeah.
And then maybe they watch things together mm-hmm. and, like, do different yeah. club-type stuff. Which, yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, there's, like, beginner book club, intermediate book club, advanced book club, or whatever. Mm. The beginner book club I did not participate in, but I did read the book, which is, like, a little baby book.
That's cute. Yeah. I like that. That seems fun. Anyway, I'll leave a link in the show notes for that. It's called Renshu App, if anyone's interested in checking it out. I feel like for all the resources and lists that we read, it was not really mentioned that much. Like, maybe we saw it once, or maybe I even saw it in the app store recommended and that's how I found it. I can't remember, but now that you know it, you're able to find like the Reddit community mm-hmm. and stuff, but it seems like it's not appreciated as much as it should be. Speaking of things that we've been reading, I'm gonna rant. I realized I thought you were gonna rant, Marcus, but I have a little rant. We were looking at different resources, and one of the top resources that comes out for, like, learning Japanese, you know, hiragana resource or whatever in Google is Tofugu. And probably you're listening, you like Japan, you may have heard of Tofugu. They do a lot of, I guess, actually, you know, I'm not sure what their main thing is. I think it was like a blog website where they just write articles about Japan, Japanese culture, and different things. I don't know if they're still doing that or if it's more of a resource site now. But it's like, you know, best places to travel in Tokyo, or, you know, beginner's guide to learning Japanese. And then they have all these different things about Japan in general. And it's a very nice site. I always like their design. They got some cute illustrators, you know, making the site look really nice. And it's definitely well known. But they have a guide to learning hiragana and katakana, and also mnemonics, which is very helpful for hiragana and katakana. I feel like maybe some people might think, oh, mnemonics is kind of like childish, but especially when you're learning something that's so visual. I don't know, how do kids learn like ABCs? Do they get mnemonics too? Like, the A looks like an apple or something.
I honestly don't remember.
I don't know. But it's very helpful. Wouldn't you agree it was helpful for learning hiragana? Because otherwise it's like really brute force, like trying to remember this thing that you have no connection to anything. But if you think about, what's a good one?
She.
She has long hair. And then you remember that. Yeah. So when I remember, like, we'd be quizzing, and if you get stuck on something, I would just kind of prompt you with the mnemonics. So it's like a hint, but you still have to put the two and two together and remember the character. So that's pretty good. But back to Tofugu, they have mnemonics guides. And I was looking for different resources on mnemonics to see what different people say are good mnemonics for the different hiragana. And everybody has their different ideas. She has long hair is, I think, pretty consistent for all of them. But some of the weirder ones that are harder to come up with mnemonics for have different you know, pictographs or whatever that help you remember it. So I was checking that out, and Tofugu has this whole guide, and they introduce, you know, what hiragana is, and here's how to learn it. And they said a lot of things that I had a real problem with. First of all, they're like, if you want to learn it in a day, you totally can. I don't know who's learning all, how many was it? Oh my gosh.
45
hiragana in one day. Nobody's doing that and actually, like, internalizing it, I swear. There's no way. So that was silly. Then they also said you don't need to write them because nobody writes anymore, which, true, we're all typing all the time, but I think it would be very hard to memorize characters without writing them, practicing writing. I guess if you really hate writing, you don't have to, but they said all of these things. I was just like, you know, I could write a better resource than this. And maybe I will. I don't know. But it made me mad that that was the top resource. It's like, you know, everybody goes to Duolingo. And it's like, no, please, please don't go to that. It's like, please don't read this Tofugu article. It says so many things. Like, I make people feel bad about themselves. First of all, it's like, oh, I couldn't learn all 45 in a day. I suck, you know. Or a week, even. A week, maybe, if you really... that's all you do for a whole week. You have nothing else going on but learning hiragana. I don't know. Somebody's going to write in and say, I learned hiragana today. I don't know. But I don't think that's very reasonable. And people shouldn't be setting these expectations that are so high, especially when, if you're looking at these type of resources, you're probably self-studying, you know, self-taught. And that's a lot harder than going to a class and you know, having the drills and having a lot more structure. But, you know, you're just starting out, like you said, when you were younger and you want to learn Japanese, and then you search on Google and you get this article that says, oh yeah, you can totally learn it in a day. And I think it would be pretty disheartening if that wasn't as easy as they made it out to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I agree. As for the physically writing stuff, I mean, I understand that, yes, for the most part, people are typing on computers or phones, but the point of the writing by hand is not because you're going to have to write by hand in the future. It's because you're practicing and you're remembering by writing. That's what it's about. It's not about, you know, because I need to write a paper on, you know, by hand in the future, just to help you remember. It's another way of remembering, aside from just looking at it. And also, maybe someone who's, like, a teenager could remember everything because, you know, your brain's more spongy when you're younger. But it's a lot to ask. Sometimes, like, when I learn the new letters or the sounds, I was like, okay, these hiragana, I got them. And then the next day, I'm like, I don't remember them. So it's like, you don't really remember them in one day. You, like, think you got it. And then it's like, oh, yeah. I lost it. You know, it's, yeah. You got to keep practicing beyond that day. You know, keep. And I don't know. My brain couldn't do 45 in a day.
Yeah. That's all I can say. Think so. Yeah, I don't believe it. I think they're full of it. Well, you'll be continuing to learn Japanese.
Yeah.
We've got a honeymoon in Japan coming up later this year, so you'll be able to show off all of your moves in Japan. Well, I'll be able to show off my moves, so they'll be like, hold up, hold the phone, let me handle this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can.
That's the other thing, right? So you've got me here to hound you all the time, so you don't get to be lazy.
Yep.
About practicing, mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. And then I just want to share the dumb story about the Genki books that we got.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Okay, so I really wanted a textbook, and one that's very recommended and commonly available is Genki. And so I wanted to get it, and I wanted to get it fast. I didn't want to wait.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't like using Amazon in this household. So we weren't going to do that. We don't have Prime or anything. Although I'm sure it's available all over Amazon. But we do have access to like a Japanese store, Japanese bookstore, whatever. And so you called and asked if they had it, and they said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and got it. And I was happy. Mm-hmm. And I've been using it. And then this past weekend, we went to a thrift store.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, they had the Genki books.
Yes, they had the Genki book and the workbook, which you bought both of.
Yes.
To be fair, you have the third edition.
Yes.
And this was the second edition, but honestly, they're not that different, I think. And it felt like it was barely used.
Yeah.
And you bought it anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
So I'm like, I'm mad, so I'm going to buy
it. So I'm going to buy them again. You can compare the two versions and see what's different. Yeah. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was probably, what, two or three weeks ago.
Yes.
That you bought it new.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, like, immediately, but still funny. And it wasn't, like, you know, we have Book Off here, which is a Japanese bookstore that has used things. So you could assume that they might have Genki. And actually, we probably should have looked at them, but I didn't think about it. But this was just a random thrift store in the middle of, you know, English-speaking suburb.
Yes.
And randomly had Genki, two copies and nothing else Japanese at all in the store. It was just that. Yeah, pretty funny. I feel like we have weird luck with thrifting. There was something else, some cable or something you wanted recently. We bought it new, then went thrifting and saw it and bought it again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way. We're like, well, this is our you know, penance, is we have to buy the one we find, even though we already have it. Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad to help you with the Japanese. It's fun. And then I'm motivated to study my kanji more.
Good.
And we keep talking about whether I should take JLPT1, but I don't know if I'm there yet. If you ever have a goal you want to, you know, strive for, you could try JLPT. That seems to be, again, a thing people say on the internet a lot, like, especially when you're self-studying, JLPT is a test. Like, if you're not in school, it's like, here's this test to try to, you know, gauge how well you're doing. And if you're not necessarily talking with people or, you know, immersed in a community where there's Japanese around you, you might not know how good you are, I guess. And so it seems like people like to do it to get that reassurance, like, hey, I am, you know, N3, which is like intermediate level one, so I've achieved this. It's like a little cool thing. But maybe you don't feel like you need that. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I hate tests, so I wouldn't particularly go out of my way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Okay, well, we can move on to our next segment, which is the one book you read. Now, you've read other books, but you had one book you wanted to talk about today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read a lot of things now. Again, I don't know. So I've been trying to read more romance books. Romanticy.
Yeah.
Just whatever. Yeah, I think I probably like romanticy more than realistic romance. Anyway, just trying to read more romance, because every time I try to read romance, almost every time, I don't like it, and I'm like, but I want to like it, or I should like it, or there should be something that will appeal to me in this genre. I just haven't found it yet, and so I keep trying. And so I recently found out, or maybe not recently anymore, but found out that there was a subgenre of romance that's called dark romance, where it's meant to be romance based on taboo or negative topics or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'll try this out, see what everyone's talking about.
Yeah, because it's like one of these, oh, it's so hot on TikTok type things, yes, right? Like, people, everybody's talking about, yes, all these dark romances. I
love dark romance.
How dark could they really be, is what you said to me.
Yes. Yes. So I read probably maybe the most well-known of the dark romance, I think. Probably. Mm-hmm. It's called, and it's the first of a series, Haunting Adeline. And it's a story about a woman, in very, very short terms, it's a story of a woman who falls in love with her stalker. And, you know, that's the log line. And so obviously that's a problematic topic because, you know, he's dangerous, he's a murderer, he's stalking her, obviously he's bad news. But then she's slowly into him. So that's the main plot. I did not like it. It was not the worst thing I've ever read in the romance genre, certainly. There are books I've tried to read, and it's like, I can't, and just put it down, not because it's too dark, just because it's poorly written. So this was written fine. I just didn't like it. I actually kind of liked the main character. She had more thought put into her, she's more of a well-rounded person than some other protagonists in the genre. But I just absolutely hated the stalker. He's supposed to be sexy, and I guess he is visually, you know, fit and like sexy face and whatever, and he's a bad boy and whatever, but he's got like oh, I don't know. Does he have a white eye? I don't remember anymore.
Yeah, I thought you told me he was, what is it when you have two different colored,
yeah,
eyes?
Something, yeah. Something. Yeah. Or she is. Anyway, but I just, the way he's written is, it's like what a teenage boy would think is cool. And it's like, well, I'm not a teenage boy. I don't think it's cool. You know, him and his Batman lair, where he has a really cool car, and he has all this technology, and he's so smart. He's, like, a genius. And he's... Oh, also it's, like, oh, also the plot is like, Pizzagate-related, I feel.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
If not officially. They don't say that word, but that's basically what it's about. It, like, so he is doing this thing to, like, save children from predators who are, of course, all the powerful people in government and everything. But it's just, the way he's written is so bad. It's so stupid. I'm like, I can't take any of this seriously. So he's not cool to me. So I don't care about any of it. Anyway, the book is dumb. And as far as tabooness, I guess it's taboo in a sense. It's not bad. Like, it's not the worst thing I've read in regards to themes. Also, at the end of the day, you know, she does consent. So, it's okay. I don't know. She does consent. Okay. Unless it's been too wild. I don't remember anymore.
Okay, well...
It's also not the steamiest book I've ever written, although it is pornographic.
Oh, ever written.
Oh my god, ever read. Ever read. Excuse me.
I wish you were writing steamy books.
Excuse me, ever read. But it is pornographic. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest not reading it. Okay. That's my review.
Okay. And you have been slowly working your way around, but I guess, have you read anything else that was considered dark? I guess that one I recommended to you, and I can't remember the name of it.
Oh.
The vampire-y one.
Oh my god, what was that called? I don't remember.
We'll remember later, and I'll...
Yeah, okay, there was
I'll talk while you look it up. Yeah, there was... I'm not sure why we were like, oh, we should read dark romance. I guess because, you know, we like horror and romance, so why not dark romance? And there is this thing where you see a lot of people making a big deal out of, oh, those book talk girlies are reading the worst trash. And then I think we saw like someone on YouTube doing like a commentary on how people are like up in arms because, you know, Barnes and Noble and all the bookstores are being overrun with this trash smut, and it's horrible and degenerate. And, you know, every, you know, generation of girls have people trashing what they like.
Yes.
So it's just that, you know, next round of like people anti-Twilight or whatever, but now it's, oh no, everybody likes this horrible romance that's so bad for you. And so I guess we wanted to see kind of what people were talking about. But
I mean, it's fiction.
Yeah,
it's a safe space to explore things that you probably or might not like in real life, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It just, in this case, I didn't like the book. And the other book was The Wicked and the Willing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which was a lesbian vampire book.
Yes, and I started reading, and I was like, this seems pretty cool, Marcus. You should read it, and we'll read it together. And then you read it, and you were like, it was fine. And I said, okay, I won't read it anymore then. Because, to be fair, I was already just kind of petering out on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny how that turned out. You were like, no, you don't need to read it. It's okay. But, cool premise. It's like, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like 1920s, like Singapore, mm-hmm. right? Setting, which I really liked the setting. It was really unique. I thought the writing was pretty nice.
Yes.
And so it had really cool world building. It's like a young woman in Singapore who's like kind of down and out and trying to find a job. And then she gets a job working as like a maid, I guess, a live-in maid for a wealthy European woman who's a vampire. So you've got like the class and race stuff going on and the time period and then vampires. But that one was, I guess, supposed to be really gory or intense or something.
And not necessarily super gory, but it is intense.
Oh, okay.
I feel like there's more questions around consent in that book,
okay,
to be honest.
Hmm.
And yeah, I thought it was extremely well written, like in regards to how it gives you the setting and the world building. Very well done. Interesting plot where I wanted to see where it went. But I just, the only problem was I never felt like the characters had enough time to really start having romantic feelings for each other. It was just kind of like, we see each other sometimes in the hall and we say hi. And then all of a sudden we're banging.
Oh.
And I'm like, where was the buildup? Where's the tension?
Yeah.
Where's the tension? That's like the whole part, you know? And that was missing for me. So I'm like, I don't really feel that she should care about this person.
Oh.
That was just me.
Oh, and interestingly about that book, too, is it's all billed as like choose your own ending, right?
Yes.
So you can, there are two characters that the main character has feelings for. And then at the end of the book, it's not like a choose your own adventure where you choose and
it's only at the end.
Yeah, the very end, you basically pick which person you want her to end up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a secret, quote, I'm doing air quotes, secret third ending. If you subscribe to the author's newsletter, you can get this third ending or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's fun. You know, I don't feel like I've seen that before.
Yeah, I thought both endings were well done. It's kind of like a whole epilogue. But for one of them, like, I don't think she would choose that, so obviously.
Yeah, okay.
I read them
both.
So
you had one that you were like, this is my canon.
Yes.
Okay. So that was Wicked and the Willing. Would you say overall it was better than Haunting?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's better.
Yeah. I might go back to it, but yeah, when you said that the romance wasn't really there, I was kind of disappointed, because that's what I wanted. I want a cool setting, good world building, and good romance. And dark themes, too, if they want to have them. That's fine with me, too. Okay, well, that's all the books we want to talk about for today, I think. Moving on to video games. We got ourselves a Nintendo Switch 2. That's the new hotness. Or maybe it's not really considered the new hotness anymore.
No.
But We got it day one. We went to a Best Buy where we had pre-ordered it and waited in line to pick it up. It was quite a line that went all the way around the parking lot sometimes. And we got... We got the pack-in bundle. So yes, it came with the Mario Kart World, which is fine. Don't really have much to say about Mario Kart, you know.
I like the costumes.
Yeah, the costumes are cute. Unlocking them was a bit silly because you literally just sit, camp in one spot, and like run over the like hamburger over and over again and unlock different ones. Right? Mm-hmm. But they were really cute. I like Weather Daddy Bowser. He's definitely a fave. There were a lot of cute ones, so that's fun and all. So I guess I can tell this story. So we actually got two Switches. We ended up pre-ordering two because of all the hubbub with, you know, the whole rush to pre-order online. We weren't sure whether we were going to get one or not. And also, I think the night of, they were, like, canceling some, yes, right? So it was, like, some retailers you get the pre-order in, but then the next day it would get canceled. So when we both got them, we said, why don't we just keep it? And one of the units, actually the one we picked up at Best Buy, was a bundle with, so it was a unit that came with Mario Kart packaged with it, and then for whatever reason it was a Donkey Kong Bonanza like bundle. Yes. So you also got the pre-order for Bonanza with that unit. The other one we ended up selling to someone, so that was fine. We weren't upselling them or anything, we just gave it to someone at market price for them to have, you know, when people couldn't get them easily. I don't even know if you can get them easily now or not. I haven't been keeping up on it. But, yeah, so someone who wanted it got it, and we didn't overcharge or anything. But luckily, we did get both of them. So we got Donkey Kong Bonanza in July when it came out. And I don't really have a love for Donkey Kong particularly. He's fine. But I got a chance to play the game early, and I had fun with it, surprisingly. This is funny. It reminds me a little bit of Monster Hunter World, because I was like, I don't really care about Monster Hunter World. Not really. I liked Monster Hunter, obviously, but it didn't look like my jam. And then I played it, and I was like, yeah, this is great. And so I played Donkey Kong Bonanza. I'm like, yeah, so I can dig this. So I would say I played the majority of it.
Yes.
Yes. We did do a little bit of the co-op, but not really. Co-op is fine. You can play as Pauline and do some, like, backup stuff, but you didn't really enjoy that. So you just watch me smash things. And mm-hmm. smashing was very fun. I did quite like that. So I had a lot of fun with Donkey Kong Bonanza. I will say, overall, it was very long. I think all up, on the Switch, in my profile, it says I've played over 35 hours. That was just beating it, rolling the credits, not getting all of the Bendarium gems, not doing all that side stuff. But some of it, I would say I did a little bit of extra stuff. But, man, probably the last 5 to 10 hours, I was kind of like, when is this going to end? It's so long, and it kept going and going, and it was a very cute game. I had a lot of fun playing it, but I don't know that I need a 35-hour 3D action game, mm-hmm. platformer-type game. I think the thing that I like about Bonanza, though, is that some people have commented, like Marcus and friend of the show, Capsule J, like, I'm not really a big platformer girly. I don't particularly love Mario. But I think the thing with Donkey Kong is you can just smash your way through almost anything. So it's like, when in doubt, smash some stuff and you can probably figure it out. There is a little bit of like platforming up to the credits roll. I'm not talking about the post game, because I did try a little bit of the post game stuff, and it definitely ramps up and you have to be a little more fiddly with technique there. But there isn't too much in terms of stuff where you have to be really precise, and I think that's what always gets me about platforming. And it was also just very cathartic, so I don't like smashing up stuff. That was fun. I will say, this is a PSA I also gave Capsule J, but if you are playing and you haven't gotten to the end, there is a point at the end where they require you to have some money on you. And I thought it was interesting, because the whole game, I never felt like I was wanting for, what is it?
Gold, just gold.
Gold, yeah, all that gold everywhere. So it kind of felt like you have way too much gold. I'm like, why do I need all this gold? But yet, I enjoyed smashing, so I generally had a fair bit of it. But I could see someone being like, this is worthless. I don't really need that much of it. But then you get to the end, and they're like, oh, you better have some. So we actually had to go back and get more.
Yeah, we had to grind for gold.
Yeah, we ground for gold. And you helped with that. That was helpful. Mm-hmm. And that was just more smashing for gold. What else? I mean, probably people have already played it by now. I feel like, you know, I'm a bit late to the game talking about it, but I enjoyed it. I would, you know, remember it fondly. And I did try to go back and play a little bit of the post game, and I was like, no, I don't have it in me to do this right now. So I don't know if I'll go back eventually. I kind of could see it, or I could just move on with my life. But I like the kind of new, what should I say, new phase for Donkey Kong they're in. Because sure. It's like, you know, he's got a bit of a new look.
Yeah, now he's a himbo.
Yeah, now he's a himbo. He's got a really nice ass for some reason and wears lots of cool fashion and can go naked if he wants to. You know, we don't judge. And yeah, I have a lot of himbo energy. and, you know, I could see them doing a sequel to this. Mm-hmm. But please make it shorter. I would be happy with 20, solid 20 hours would be good. You know, doesn't need to be super long.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I have to give my PSA, or the thing that I hate that everyone must know. Mm-hmm. I hate that Pauline doesn't have shoes.
Yeah. Every time you give her a new outfit, she still doesn't have shoes, and that made me really mad. You know, it's like Donkey Kong doesn't wear shoes either.
He's never worn shoes.
Did Pauline wear shoes in
I don't
Odyssey?
Know.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm sure she
I'm
did.
I'm sure she has heels. I'm sure in Mario Kart she has shoes too. Yeah. Also, I don't like, now I can't even, the Bonanza forms, the other forms, they really disturb me. I don't know what, they were like, let's make them as grotesque as humanly possible. And I feel like they've got some gay men on the art staff or something, because I feel like there's a very specific clientele that is into those designs.
Yeah.
And is Marcus. No. No, it just, it's very weird. Like, they're not really cute. They're just,
they're not cute or kitty. Yeah. I mean, there's a thing. Okay, like, for example, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, superheroes, so on and so forth. Very muscular characters. But it's like in the realms of plausibility or a certain type of look. These characters are a little bit off.
They look like they're on steroids. They're like roided up zebra or something.
There's a lot of weird things going on.
We have a lot of questions. Some of them aren't safe for this podcast. But yeah, so we were talking about they sort of dipped a toe in that aesthetic with Ring Fit, right?
And yes, the dragon.
Dragon and Ring Fit. He's like kind of connected to that. But Donkey Kong himself, he still has that cuteness because of his face, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got his goofy grin and he's got the himbo energy. But then when they put him in those Bonanza forms, it's just like, I don't know, are kids going to think that's fun? I just think they're horrific. I don't know. I do, in terms of designs, those little rock guys really grew on me.
Yeah.
After the Fractoids or something. Whenever they kept coming, Fractones, anyway, they kept coming up. I was hoping for a little more variation in the different types of characters in the world. So you do get some, like those adorable snakes. They're so cute.
I love them.
They're my favorite. But the rocks keep coming back. And, you know, I would see them and they'd have their little chirpy sounds. I'd be like, yeah, you're pretty cute. You're just a rock, but it's cute. I appreciated that. But, yeah, I would be interested to see more within that style or that world. But please make the Bonanza forms less scary next time. As for other games, Marcus, you started playing Yakuza 0. This is because I've never seen Yakuza, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm playing. I've already beaten this one at some point in my life, so this is more for you.
Oh, for me, thank you.
And I decided to start here since it's kind of like the start of the series in a sense. Since we're not talking about the really old historical Japan-based ones.
Right.
So.
This is the start of Kiryu's story, right?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But we haven't even seen Majima yet, which is kind of what I'm pulling
out for. I feel like I'm going very slowly.
Yeah, well, there's a lot, you know. You can go to the hostess club, which honestly we haven't even done yet, so I'm not sure why I mentioned that. But you can go bowling. I think you did bowling. Mm-hmm. Obviously the arcade. A lot of side quests, like the... What was it? The band? That was cute. The band of guys who somehow got people thinking that they were really badass when they're, like, not.
Yeah.
And they're like, please make me be badass. Now I understand the memes where everybody's like, Kiryu just does stuff for everyone for some mm-hmm. reason. It's funny. And the dominatrix sub-quest was good, yeah. too. Where she was like, you look like a mean guy. Help me be mean to people. And he's like, all right, sure. Yeah, that's fun to watch. We like, but usually it's like one of us will play a game and the other will kind of watch. And so for Bonanza, that was me playing. And I'm like, okay, I'll take a break. You play something for a while. And now you're playing Yakuza. And as I mentioned, since we're going to Japan, it's kind of fun because you get to walk around the streets. And now that you're learning Japanese, you can read some of the signs every yep. once in a while. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of Japanese and games, I finally started up Monster Hunter Stories for the Switch. So this is the first game, the HD, I guess, remaster. So it's a 3DS game that they've ported to Switch. It came in a bundle with Stories 2, which was developed for the Switch. And the bundle was just on sale. I think... Honestly, I feel like the sale said it was till like September 10th or something wild. So maybe when you're listening to this, it's still on sale. But it was like 30% off for the bundle digitally. So I decided to grab it. And I didn't realize this, but when you boot up Stories, I haven't tried Stories 2, but Stories at least, it lets you pick the text language at the beginning. So Japanese is in the English version of the game. And the Japanese has furigana, so that's the hiragana readings of the kanji. So as I mentioned, that's really helpful for people who are learning the language, and it's often in games that are aimed at like children. So Monster Hunter Stories being like that cutesy Monster Hunter that has like a tie-in anime and stuff, definitely aimed at children. And the bonus is that I can play it in Japanese, and Marcus, you can read some of it.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. So you can read along while I play, which causes me to play very slowly, but it's okay. And then I can teach you some vocab as we're going through. And so I've been playing a little bit of that. I'm not super far, but it's cute. I think back when it originally came out, maybe it was Stories 2 when that came out. Anyway, there was a demo of one of them, and I played the demo. And at the time, I was just like, well, this isn't my Monster Hunter, so I wasn't really into it, and the battles felt a bit slow. You can speed up the battles, and so far at least in Stories 1 they haven't felt too slow, because once you figure out there's like a rock paper scissors strengths and weaknesses type thing going on, so once you figure out what monsters are weak to what attack, it's pretty quick to go through the battles. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's my favorite game ever. It's very cute, and you get to see all the monsters, and pretty basic so far in terms of like RPG gameplay. So it's just a fun game to play through in Japanese for Marcus to practice reading with. And I thought it was cool to note that you can play it in Japanese, mm-hmm. and Japanese voices as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can switch at any time. So you can go in the menu and switch to back to English. To do English text with Japanese voices, whatever. So that's pretty neat. I feel like there are a ton of games that have that based in the menu when you start up the game. Some games will say the Japanese version will switch to English when it's playing on a Switch that the Switch system language is in English, so there's some of that going on. But aside from maybe like Pokemon, I can't really think of any games that let you pick the language on the start screen like that. So that's cool. I think those are the only games we've been playing so far.
Seriously, yes.
Seriously, recently, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, picking up some stuff, like we got, you know, Cyberpunk for the Switch 2 just to see how it played, and you dabbled in that a bit, and killed some people accidentally.
Yeah, yeah. I killed the people at the gym.
Yeah, that was sad.
I wasn't trying to.
That might.
I was like trying to figure out how to take a screenshot or something.
Yeah, and then you just threw a grenade at them, or yeah, that's about where we're at. Our gameplay experience. But when we're not gaming, we're watching lots of movies. In particular, because Marcus here, you were subscribed to Vinegar Syndrome for a very long time, right? That's why you have all these movies, isn't it?
Yes. So Vinegar Syndrome is just a movie, I don't know, distributor? I don't know what to call them ever. But they release a lot of old and often, like, movies that were either very rare to get on, like, DVD, or maybe were never available on DVD, only available on VHS. And even then, might have been a rare VHS types of films. But, you know, often if a movie is long gone like that, it's not because it's good. It's because it's a movie that was forgettable, a flop, something. Not always, but some, you know, often. So Vinegar Syndrome specializes in a lot of horror, action, and foreign films, and I liked them a lot, and I liked what they were doing, and at a time where it felt like I'd seen all the horror movies, it gave me things new to watch, so I was happy, and so I subscribed to them, because you can subscribe to them for a yearly price to get access to the majority of their new releases in a year. And then they'll send them to you every month in the mail. So I did that for, like, a couple years. And I ended up with quite a bit of movies. And I didn't watch them all.
Mm-hmm. How many would you get a month? Like, five or six?
So it depends on the month. Probably the lowest month would be, like, three movies. And, like, the biggest month, like, October, could be six. Or even more, because sometimes they'd release a box set of, like, a thing of three movies, and then there's still other releases.
Yeah. So you have a lot of movies.
I have a lot of Vinegar Syndrome movies, yes.
And to be fair, they might not all be good.
Yes. Yes, a lot of them aren't good.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are interesting and funny and weird.
Yes, they may not be good, but they're interesting. So you wanted to go through and watch them and decide which ones, you know, you feel are worth keeping for the collection versus ones that you really don't need to hang on to because they're no good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been our motive, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I had a brief moment where I was like, I'm going to collect them. I'm going to be a collector of Vinegar Syndrome. God. But then they kept adding new lines, like labels-ish, and those labels were not a part of the subscription. So it's like, okay, so I'm subscribed, but I'm not really getting everything. I've got to buy these other movies that are coming out now if I want to be a real collector of Vinegar Syndrome. I got to get the Vinegar Syndrome Ultra releases. I got to get the Vinegar Syndrome Labs releases. I got to get Pink Label, which is their newest label. All these things. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, like, no, this is unsustainable. Although, at least when you were a subscriber, you would get a discount on all their releases. But this is like, no, I can't do this. I don't need to do this. A lot of these movies aren't that good. So I stopped subscribing.
I'm glad you made that choice. We'd be overrun in Vinegar Syndrome.
Yes,
the whole
seriously.
House would be covered in movies. As it stands, you have about, like, one shelf, one very full shelf of movies that we've been trying to watch some of. So basically how it works is I'll go up to the shelf and I'll randomly pick a few things and be like, okay, what are you feeling? Because Marcus here is notoriously bad at deciding things. So we might say, oh, let's watch a movie. And then we're like, oh, what do you want to watch? And I'll throw out a few ideas. You're like, oh, I don't know. And then you'll throw an idea. And I'll be like, I don't feel that one. But you're bad at picking. I feel like I can pick better than you can. So I narrow it down by saying, okay, here are three. You have to pick one of these. And we've been going through them. So some of the highlights, I would say, recently. I think most of these, I'm making notes about the ones that I think are from our Vinegar Syndrome checklist. Mm-hmm. We have some other things we're going to talk about that weren't necessarily from that, because we do watch other things. But first of all, there was one called Blades.
Yes.
This was from Vinegar Syndrome, yes. Right? Yeah. And this is... All we got was the cover was like an evil lawnmower attacking a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally is that. It takes place on a golf course, and it's a story about a... I don't know if they ever really explained if it's a demonic or haunted lawnmower, but it's an evil lawnmower that eats people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was really dumb.
Yeah.
But guess what? We decided to keep it. That one made the cut.
It was funny.
It was very funny. I think after we watched it, I was like, this is really a Jaws parody.
Yes,
and I didn't realize that going in, because they could have kind of played it differently, but when you think about the narrative beats and, like, the way, you know, as you mentioned, the couple that gets eaten at the beginning, eaten by the lawnmower at the beginning, and then the way at the end they kind of, like, the crew of people who are like, we're going to take out this lawnmower, they get in a car and they're like sitting on the top of the car, and it's like the scene when they're at the end of Jaws in the boat trying to get Jaws. So very similar, that the kind of comically dumb owner of the golf course, there's a golf tournament coming up and he's like, no, we're not going to close the golf course, like, I don't care what's going on, this is really important, we're going to be on TV, it's going to be national TV. And very much like the, you know, mayor of whoever who didn't want to close the beaches when they were having issues in Jaws. So a lot of weird parallels, but it was just dumb. But good dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an evil lawnmower. I was surprised how long they went without showing it. It was like a lot of the movie.
It's kind of only around as you get towards the climax,
right? Yeah, basically. And then all of a sudden you see it on the horizon.
It looks good, though. It's good. It doesn't look stupid. It's like a pretty, like, I don't know if it was like a machine that they rigged.
I don't know.
But it looks really good. It looks like a real gnarly lawnmower.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so that one was fun, and we kept that. Another fun one was Shattered Dead, which honestly, I didn't watch all of it because I didn't think it was going to be good, and I was like, I got other things to do. So I'll let you talk about that one.
Yeah, so Shattered Dead is a zombie movie, but it's definitely not a typical zombie movie. It's basically where people are becoming zombies, and I don't know that they know why it's happening. But when you become a zombie, it's not like you're suddenly evil or going to eat someone's brains. It's just like, now you're a zombie, now you're like undead. So you don't have like, you're not warm anymore and you look a little bit different, maybe a little bit paler, maybe not. But it's just like, you know, if you get injured, your body's just going to stay that way. It's not going to heal anymore. So it's like these zombie people are around, and you're not like brain, it's not like you don't have a brain anymore. They're still able to think and act and talk and everything. It's just now they're zombies. Mm-hmm. So it was a very interesting spin on things. And there are still some humans in the world who have not turned into zombies yet. But there's a lot of zombies, and some of the zombies are trying to, like, prove that they're still, I don't know, worthy or just like everyone else. So they're, like, hiding and trying to act like they're not dead. Like, there was, like, one lady in the movie where she's like, I gotta keep moving around or all my blood will pool in one spot and it'll make this ugly bruise on my body. So she's gotta keep moving around. She can't lay down. She doesn't sleep anymore. So, odd. Very odd. But I thought it was cool. Sad?
Yeah.
You know? It's downbeat for sure. But I liked it.
It was interesting from what I saw. Mm-hmm. I would pop in and be like, what's going on? The main thing I would say is the acting overall was very bad.
The main character's acting was very bad. Okay. I feel like a lot of the other characters were better than her.
Okay, yeah, she was bad. And then you made a comment, like, she's kind of giving, like, porn star acting levels. And then there was a scene that made us think, oh, maybe that she was. And that's why she's here. Because there was kind of an explicit scene at the end, wasn't there?
Yeah.
That I happened to see.
Yeah.
Because isn't the whole plot that she's trying to get back to her boyfriend or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a weird one. But you kept that, too, because
it was unique.
Yeah,
I liked it.
I mean, the bits that I saw was fun. Like, the bit with that character you mentioned where she was saying, you know, she doesn't lie down because her blood will pool. And it was a weird concept. Like, I don't feel like you've seen zombies portrayed that way before. And, yeah, when there were some scenes where zombie characters got injured and then you saw them sustain that injury, which I guess does happen in other zombie movies, you know, that's how zombies are, but in this they're still lucid and like they're still the same person they were before they died. It's just their body's dead, but their brain isn't dead, and like they're not like, oh, brains all the time like other zombie movies are. So it was an interesting concept where it was like one character who got really messed up, a zombie character, and then he still mentally was there, but he couldn't even speak right, like, the same way anymore. He couldn't form words because of the way he'd been hurt, basically. Very weird movie. And there was a whole, like, religious thing going on.
Yeah, it was, like, basically, you know, whatever this is happening is divine. And we're going to basically spur it along. We're going to make everyone zombies, effectively.
Okay. Yeah. That seems like a common zombie movie plot, too. Like, religious people saying that the end of times is here, and, you know, woo. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, very interesting film. Very weird. finally, the last, I think, Vinegar Syndrome movie we wanted to watch that we're going to mention is called Buried Alive. We had a fun story about this. Would you like to share what happened with Buried Alive?
Yeah, so the silly thing maybe is that even though I have all these movies on disc because I got them from Vinegar Syndrome, I'm lazy and often I just prefer, if they're available on streaming, to just find them on streaming and watch them. It's quicker,
a little, just a little.
And also, actually, a surprising amount of Vinegar Syndrome releases are available on streaming.
Yeah, a lot of them, like, on free streaming, like, yeah, Tubi, like Tubi, or what's the other one?
Pluto,
yeah.
So, a lot of them are online already, so you can get them. So we wanted to watch Buried Alive, and so we searched that and found it. And then we watched it and enjoyed it, right?
Yeah, relatively. But I think we were about halfway through and we were like, this doesn't quite seem like the Buried Alive we thought we were going to watch.
No, we got through half or something and maybe there was a commercial because these free streaming services have commercials. And I was like, let me look, or something prompted me to look at the back of the box.
Yes.
And I read it and I'm like, this is not the same movie.
And I even made a comment. I was like, I'm sure there are a lot of movies called Buried Alive out there. It seems like a pretty common title. But then we didn't put two and two together, and we still watched a different Buried Alive.
Because it was like a year apart or something.
Yeah, that was the other thing, as I was thinking, you know, oh, this is around 1990. And the one when we found that we searched for came up, and it was from 1990. So I was like, oh, it seems right. And we often don't read the descriptions of these films.
Yeah, intentionally.
Just to see what they are without having any ideas. But the Buried Alive that we own is a retelling of the Edgar Allan Poe story. And the one we ended up watching was not. So I guess we could have put that together, but I didn't remember. Anyway, so more of the story is we watched a different Buried Alive first. Surprisingly fun, actually. And it was a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
Very odd. Like, a story about husband and wife. Wife is unhappy. She has a, you know, person she's sleeping with on the side. And he's like, why don't you kill your husband? And if you kill him, you can sell his business. He's got, like, some kind of architecture business or something. And so she can sell the business off and they can take all the money and go to California because she's, you know, a big city girl and she doesn't like living in the country with her husband who likes woodworking or whatever he's doing. And so she kind of botches killing him, but he ends up getting buried anyway because he appears to be dead, and shenanigans ensue when he comes back. A lot. I remember, so we were halfway through the movie, and we're like, wait, he's back already, but the movie's about him being buried alive, so why isn't he buried alive longer? Like, you think the movie's going to be about him getting out and, like, the whole struggle of that. But actually, it's more like, oh, what's he going to do now that he's back?
Yeah.
And that was the, like, main thrust of the movie, but completely different from the other Buried Alive, which is the Vinegar Syndrome one, which is this retelling of the Edgar Allan Poe story, which I'm not familiar with actually, but what takes place at an all-girls school where there's a new teacher,
and she's like, I've been so anxious, so I want to go to this new job and, you know, get rid of some of this anxiety. But then she went to like a home for like troubled teens.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, a
very stressful place.
Yeah, where they go to, like, you know, as an alternative for, like, juvenile delinquents to get sent to this school to get reformed. And she, for some reason, thinks that that's going to be good for her anxiety. And I remember watching the whole film, and then she's having these, like, visions, and all these horrible things are happening, and the girls are being mean to her. And I'm like, oh, this poor woman and her anxiety is too real. I can't deal with the stress of this lady who I just wanted to break. And now she's here getting harassed by these mean teenage girls. And the weird man who's, like, trying to come on to her. And, yeah. And then people are getting buried alive, as the title suggests. Mm-hmm. So that one actually was not that great.
No.
And we didn't keep it, right?
Yep.
So that's the one we didn't keep. But we would have kept the made-for-TV version.
Yes.
That one was fun. That one really went off the rails. But again, nothing to do with the Edgar Allan Poe story. Just a separate thing entirely that we happened to watch.
Yeah, and we almost watched a different Buried Alive when we after we finished the first movie and realized it was wrong. And we were like, oh, on the Vinegar Syndrome box, it was based on Edgar Allan Poe. Then we searched, and we found a Buried Alive that was called maybe even Edgar Allan Poe's Buried Alive.
It was wrong.
Different movie.
Different movie from, like, the 2000s, so yes. Be careful. There are a lot of movies called Buried Alive. As for movies we chose to watch that were not part of this Vinegar Syndrome collection, well, first of all, if you're listening, you may know that there's a new Freaky Friday movie, which is very exciting. So the sequel to Lindsay Lohan and, oh my gosh, I can't think of her name.
Jamie Lee
Curtis.
Yeah,
thank you. Jamie Lee Curtis's Freaky Friday from, I don't know, 20 years ago. Freakier Friday is out in cinemas. And we wanted to rewatch the original get ready to go see that, which we still haven't seen, but we rewatched the original. And then you mentioned that there was, like, a horror movie version of this called Freaky, and then we should watch that. So we did.
Yep. And I hadn't seen it before.
Right.
I just had heard of it. A friend had recommended it to me back when it came out, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I didn't watch it.
And you finally did.
Yeah, so basically the body swap that happens in this movie is a teenage girl and a middle-aged serial killer, basically.
Male
serial killer, yes. And the best thing, or the first thing I can say about it isn't creepy with him being weird about being in a teenage girl's body. There's nothing sick. It's just, like, he seems to take it really easily, honestly. He just kind of is like, okay.
Yeah. He's pretty chill about it.
He's like, you know, whatever, my goal is murder, and I'm still gonna do that.
And he's like, ooh, this is convenient for murder. People aren't gonna suspect me, type thing. But yes, it could have gotten really weird and uncomfortable, and they didn't do any of that, which I appreciated.
Yep. And so, I think, in Freaky Friday, they never really reveal it to other people that they've switched, so it's a secret. But at least the girl reveals it to her best friends, and then, you know, has to prove who she really is, because obviously she doesn't look like it anymore. But it was very funny, a little bit gory.
Yeah,
a little bit gory, which I know you don't love. But the story was fun. I liked it overall. I think that it's very silly and stupid, but, you know, I think they know that too. So it's not like it's meant to be played in any straight way. It's just silly.
Yeah, it was like silly and stupid and fun in a good way. Like it, as we mentioned, didn't... I was like, well, you know, immediately when you think of a grown man and a teenage girl swapping bodies, it could go very poorly for us, the viewer, in terms of making it uncomfortable or making, like, dumb, crude jokes and things like that. But it was surprisingly thoughtful, and when it was funny, it wasn't, like, ever really, like, at the expense of, you know, when it's, I guess, punching down that type of humor, it never really did that. And then there were some scenes that were surprisingly, like, poignant, or maybe poignant is the wrong word. I'm thinking of the scene, so there's a boy crush in the film, and she does reveal that she is trapped in the serial killer body to the boy crush, and the interactions with him while she's in this grown man's body were very interesting. And like watching Freaky Friday and the interactions between the teen heartthrob boy and the teen girl who is in the mom's body, and he gets interested in the mom, that was extremely uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, so it was interesting to see that done where you're swapping genders and you're getting the age differences. And so anyway, it was surprisingly well done, I thought, from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And yes, very silly, you know, a lot of, you know, high school mean characters that you kind of enjoy seeing get murdered, and some really dumb stuff happens, but overall very fun. I liked it. But yes, there was some gore in it, so if you're sensitive to gore like me, you might want to turn away. But it's choreographed pretty well. It's not like unexpected when it's happening, so that's always appreciated. And then finally we went to the movies in the theater to see Bad Guys 2. So yep. That's an animated film. We both seen Bad Guys 1 separately, because that was a few years ago it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly good, the first one. Pretty cute. So when we saw that there was a sequel coming out, we had to go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't remember that much about it. I just enjoyed it, though.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I enjoyed it, though. I think it was like the bad guys are good now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but they're forced to be
bad again,
involved in crime because of this new group.
Yes, that's like manipulating them.
Yes.
Yeah. I just remember thinking, man, I'm a furry when I watch that, because I'm like, all these cute animal characters, and the villain leopard, that snow leopard lady, was super cool, and I was like, oh, I don't know, I love this. Anyway, it was fun. There was a new character, Raven, or Crow, I don't know, that's played by
Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah, Natasha Lyonne, and she, like, has some fun scenes with the snake character,
who's
in the original group that was in the first movie. So I enjoyed the new characters they added. They were fun. I don't know that they'll come back, though, since they're, like, the villains, but I could see they'll probably, you know, do a sequel. I guess it's a book series, so they're probably just adapting all the books at this point. But what I really like is the animation is really nice. Like, it just looks really cool. I think is this DreamWorks? It is, right?
Yes, I think so.
They're doing some really neat stuff. Like, obviously, the Spider-Man, like, Into the Spider-Verse was really cool animation. And they have that new movie called Goat, which they had a trailer for that before Bad Guys 2. And the animation in that looks really amazing. But I think Bad Guys 2 also has a really cool, like, you know, obviously digital animation, but kind of clay, cel-shaded-y. I don't know. I just like what they're doing. Whereas Disney stuff always kind of, well, not always, but recently a lot of it has a very computer kind of, I don't know. You know what I'm trying to say?
I mean, it all looks the same.
Yeah, sure. It looks
it's
the same.
A certain style. It's the Disney Pixar style.
Yeah.
But that style is the same, and it doesn't change.
Yes. I don't feel like it's when I watch... Yeah, I don't feel like when I watch the Disney 3D films that I'm seeing a lot of interesting things happening artistically. Not saying that there isn't a lot of skill involved, but yes, just interesting ways of doing animation in some of these DreamWorks films that I like. It would be cool to see Disney try some different styles. Maybe they tried with Wish a little bit. I don't know. I didn't see that one. I watched the trailers, and then the reviews were really horrible. But a lot of the other recent ones is like very, very similar character designs, very similar animation style. Like, yeah, not as exciting that way. So from that perspective, even if you don't love the, you know, kid's story or anything, which I do think is a cute movie, but animation-wise, Bad Guys 1 and 2, both very cool looking. So yeah, I think that's everything we want to talk about today. Did you have any parting thoughts you wanted to share?
Parting thoughts. No.
No.
I think that's everything.
Okay. Are you happy to be podcasting again?
Yeah.
Good. Me too. And I hope you are enjoying listening to us ramble for an hour about stuff we like, mostly, except for Haunting Avalon. Adeline?
I don't know. Yeah,
okay. Anyway, we mostly like things, but, you know, every once in a while we'll have a rant, like my tofu goo rant for today. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for listening, and we are not going to commit to a schedule at this stage, but we'll try to be regular. We'll try to be back before a year goes by. Thank you, and have a great week.